We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning and thank you for joining me again for Sunday Sunrise, a public affairs show produced locally by Entercom Phoenix. I'm Annie Salas, your host, and my first guest this morning is Jessica Rice. She is the race director for the upcoming 9/11 Heroes Run, hosted by the Travis Mannion Foundation. Thank you for coming in today. Tell me, first of all, what is the organization about?
So the Travis Mannion Foundation, what it does, their mission is to empower families of fallen heroes and veterans to develop character in future generations. So their big goal is to really, when we have a divided country like what we have right now, is to really like gain back that character and instill that in our future generations by using veterans and fallen or family members of fallen heroes.
So it's a national organization. Tell me how it got started and a little bit of the history of it.
So a little bit of the history is so Travis Mannion, who is a from the first lieutenant from the U.S. Marine Corps, he was killed in Iraq on his second tour while saving his teammates, and his family started this organization as his mantra before he left for his second tour. He said, if not me, then who? So if I'm not going to go, then who's going to go? So mm-hmm. I'm going to go and do my second tour. So they really use his mantra, if not me, then who, to empower, citizens, first responders, veterans, family members of the fallen heroes to really continue their service for the Travis Mannion Foundation. So that's a little bit of the background.
So do they do this through programs, workshops? What exactly?
Yeah, absolutely. So their main focus is a Character Does Matter program. What that is they take, veterans that coming back and with a transition and kind of putting them through in this empowerment course have them relay positive psychology in instilling character in young adults from the ages of 12 to 20. So these empowerment programs, they come back and it helps for them to transition into civilian life through meaning, empowerment, and relationships. So that's really that helps them, it's not only helping to build character in future generations, but it's also helping the veterans to transition into civilian life.
What were the ages again?
12 to 20. That's what they like to, focus on for building character.
So it's not just for youth that are looking into getting into the military, or do they have to?
No, I mean, it's actually free because of all the great funding and all the people that support the Travis Mannion Foundation. So it's free to youth groups or, high schools or even like middle schools. So it's free to them. And then they just come in and it's a day training, class to really like instill that character does matter. And then they also do service projects, too, in their local communities. So it's really also to bring the communities together when there's so much diversity. Mm-hmm. And our country's never been this divided, right?
Yeah.
So that's why they really want to instill that character and get back to, the whole mantra of, the military and serving for each other and all of that good stuff.
So can you paint a picture of what that workshop looks like? And is it just one day, you said?
So it's usually just one day. Mm-hmm. And then so they'd go through like an empowerment, like I said, the veterans go through like an empowerment course. So it focuses on positive psychology to really like give examples, through the Character Does Matter and really build that character and envelop the youth to go out and serve and not be so divided and just kind of bring everyone together and serve together.
So is this available to anybody, and how can more people find out about it and get signed up for it?
Absolutely. So yeah, you know, it's available to anybody. So you just go to travismanion.org and then you click on Join the Mission, and it kind of tells you, tells you what we're about and what the Travis Manion Foundation does. And then I'll show you how to get involved. So again, travismanion.org, and then you go to Join the Mission. And then you can also become a member of the Travis Manion Foundation. And that will get you communication and all of that good stuff, newsletters and all that jazz.
So you have an upcoming event. This is, I'm assuming, a fundraiser for the organization.
Absolutely.
And also, of course, to raise awareness. But before we talk about that, tell me about fundraising for the Travis Manion Foundation and where that money goes. How's it used?
So it's used to help fund events like the 9/11 Heroes Run, for example, help fund the events for Operation Legacy, which is the service projects in the communities, and then also helps fund the empowerment classes and the transition, to help fund the transition of the veterans coming down, coming back from, overseas into civilian life. So it helps to fund them getting those classes. And then also for the Character Does Matter. And that makes the Character Does Matter program free. So this funding helps to ensure that this goes and veterans can go to the youth groups and to the schools, mm-hmm. and do it for free.
Can you give me the website address one more time, by the way?
Yes, travismanion.org.
And what about volunteer opportunities?
Oh, there's tons. So you don't have to be a family of a fallen hero or even a veteran. You can still volunteer. Again, if you go on travismanion.org and then just hit, you can be a member. And that's usually for the people that are just civilians to be a member, to get involved and be a Travis Manion Character Does Matter ambassador. You have to be a veteran, but you can also just be a civilian and go and join the mission and then become a member. And then that will give you tons of volunteer opportunities, tell you what's going on in your community and all that good stuff.
All right. So tell me about the, is it a walk or a run?
So it's a 5K, and it's also a 5K go ruck, and it's also a 1 mile fun run / walk. So there's a lot of the things going on. So it's an all-encompassing 9/11 Heroes Run in Mesa. So what the Travis Manion Foundation does is that they partner with local organizations. I actually work for Planet Fitness, but I'm doing this as my service, on a volunteer basis. So I'm the race director, and 7 years ago, my former boss, who is in a retired Air Force and Navy fighter pilot, he came to me, and he is friends with the Travis Manion, or with Colonel Manion in Doylestown. He kind of came to us as a group and was like, hey, we want to bring the 9/11 Heroes Run to, Arizona. So who wants to be involved? I'm like, I totally want to do it. That's totally me. Like, I love putting on events. I love planning stuff. I'm like, let's do it. So that was 7 years ago. And this is our seventh year. It's at a new venue. We've been doing it at Tempe Beach Park. But this year it's going to be at the ASU Polytechnic Campus in East Mesa. We changed venues just because we were kind of pigeonholed to the Labor Day weekend. We wanted to get it closer to 9/11. So 7 years later, we're doing it in a new venue, and we're super excited about it.
So people have to register for this ahead of time?
Yeah, so we can register ahead of time. Registration is going on now. It closes on September 11th at 11:59 p.m., but there is also race day registration beginning at 6:30 a.m.
So will there be any other, special events that are part of this particular event? I'm sure it's not just a run. You probably have other ways to, honor the victims of 9/11.
Oh, absolutely. So we're super excited. So what we're doing, this kind of, the 9/11 Heroes Run, the whole mantra is you're remembering, obviously, the people that lost their lives in 9/11, but you're also honoring the people that lost their lives since 9/11 and the war since. So what we're doing is we're going to kind of line the course and be our, the road lines in the course. What we're doing is we are creating kind of poster boards or H stakes, the political boards that show every person in Arizona who lost their life, either first responder or military, since 9/11. So it's actually 243 men and women who served our country or our state or our city. And we are showing their the picture, their end of watch date, and the service that they provided for us. So that's going to be really cool.
And what time does this start again?
The race starts at 8 a.m., but Vendor Village opens at 6:30 a.m., so you can come in and register, pick up your packet then. And then we also have, you know, we have tons of vendors. We have over like 30 local vendors that are going to be out there. We're going to have a family fun zone that has a couple bounce houses. We're going to have, I think we have five food trucks that are coming. We have Big Red from the Cardinals and then Baxter from the D-backs coming. We have a bagpiper coming, so it's going to be really patriotic. We have tons of American flags that are going to line the start and finish, so it's going to be really cool. We have a Polynesian dance group that's going to perform, and then giant screens to show videos of the Travis Mannion Foundation and what they've done and kind of success stories and stuff like that.
Well, speaking of success stories, do you have any that you could share with us?
Absolutely. Yeah. So actually my right-hand man, my co-race director, he's got involved the last 2 years and super involved this year. Ben Alexander, he is a local, he's a medically retired Mesa sergeant. And Travis Mannion Foundation really, really helped him. When he came back from overseas, he felt very disconnected, and he didn't really know how to transition into civilian life. He had his family, but that was a lot. They didn't understand. They were two young boys, his wife. It was difficult. So he got involved with the Travis Mannion Foundation, and through the empowerment program and becoming a Character Does Matter ambassador, and like doing local service projects that he's put on in the community, he's really like been able to transition, and having that support from Travis Mannion Foundation and the support from other veterans that are in his shoes, that's what he really was, it really helped him to transition and change. He always says it's changed my life. Mm-hmm. Travis Mannion Foundation changed my life. And we've got a video of him, and he'll be there, and he's been like an ambassador for the Travis Mannion Foundation and so helpful with the run, and he's awesome, and he's an inspiration for sure.
So is there anything else you want to let people know about the upcoming event before we wrap up?
So, yeah, I mean, I just encourage anybody who has not signed up yet for the run. So, again, we have a 5K. It is a chipped run, but it's not a qualifier. So just come out and you can run, you can walk, or you can just support. So it's a 5K. We also have a 5K Go Ruck, which is where you fill your backpack with, I think it's 20 pounds. I'm not a Go Ruck. We do have a Go Ruck expert, but I'm not that person. But I think it's 20 pounds or 30 pounds, something like that. But then you just ruck the 5K, and that's a separate category that you can win a medal for. So that's cool. So if you're into that, we can totally accommodate that. Then we have a 1 mile fun run / walk. So if you have kids out there that want to come and take a walk through the ASU Polytech campus, it's a beautiful course. I would suggest doing that. So just register, you know, by 9/11, or you can register day of, or if you don't even want to register, just come out and support, support and show your support for the, you know, the fallen veterans and the people from 9/11 and all that good stuff. We'd just love to have you come out and support.
Is there anything else about the organization and the programs that you offer that you want to let the community know about, and just how to support in general, you know, not just this time of year, but throughout the year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely, if you become a member with the Travis Mannion Foundation, you can get all the newsletters and what's going on in your communities. They're good at like pinpointing like what's going on around you. So you can get involved with any Operation Legacy project, or you can submit your own Operation Legacy project too through the website. So that's something that's pretty cool. So if you have something that you want to submit through the Travis Mannion Foundation to do for a project, you can totally do that through the foundation and through the website. And I think just, you know, you can donate at any time of the year, obviously, but, you know, they have stuff going on not only around 9/11, but service projects, Character Does Matter programs, they can come to you and do that. So there's so many things you can get involved with the Travis Mannion Foundation. I just encourage you go on the website and see how to do it.
And the website again?
TravisMannion.org.
Well, registration closes on 9/11, so be sure to get signed up before that. Jessica Rice is the race director for the 9/11 Heroes Run hosted by the Travis Mannion Foundation. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You look nice. How was work?
Well, it was fourth period civics.
The kids were giving me the third degree. Was a UFO seen hovering over Washington, D.C.? Was a fisherman attacked by a 320-pound shrimp? They'd been bitten by the fake news bug, all right, and it was holding on like a driver's ed student to a steering wheel. How was I gonna get a bunch of wide-eyed kids to wise up about what they see on the internet? Then it hit me. Like a dodgeball on field day. The name of the game was News Snoops. Each student got an article and 2 minutes to decide if it was credible or a fake. They were able to use fact-checking sites to get the cold, hard truth. Now the little hotshots are even teaching their gullible grannies a thing or two about phony news. But how was your day?
Pretty good. I got a new title today. Office Birthday Party Planner.
Oh, fun.
Teachers just have better work stories. If you want a creative job worth talking about, head to teachdfw.org. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things, the most important things in our lives? The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, "I do," but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
My next guests this morning are Corey Furlander, who is the Arizona Area Director for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and Erica McBeth, who is on the board of the organization. And full disclosure, Erica also works here at Anarcom. But thank you both for being on the show this morning to talk about this very important topic. September is Suicide Prevention Month, and I know the organization is doing lots of stuff to educate the public and raise awareness, but let's start with what the organization itself is all about.
Yeah, so the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, our mission is to save lives and bring hope to those affected by suicide. And so I am the area director for the Arizona chapter. So we are a local chapter of a national organization. As a chapter, we're doing a lot of really great things on a national level, though, and kind of our priorities in general. So we prioritize research, education, advocacy, and providing support. On a national level, funding scientific research is something that we're very passionate about. We're the largest private funder of research in the United States. So this really kind of informs a lot of our best practices in suicide prevention. And it kind of trickles down into a lot of the programming that we do on a local level as a chapter. Locally, we're very passionate about educating the public. So we have some really great presentations that we go out into the community and do that focus on educating people about suicide, about warning signs, risk factors, things that they can look out for, as well as what they can do if they're worried about somebody. We also are very passionate about advocacy, and that actually does happen on a local level and a national level. So nationally, we have an advocacy day in D.C. every June. And then locally, we have a state capitol day. This year, that'll happen on February 3rd. And that is a day where we invite people to come out with us. We will do a little bit of training, and then we set up appointments with local state legislators for them to go in and talk about why they're passionate about suicide prevention. Because it's really important that our representatives hear about us and directly from the people that they serve. And then the last thing is we are also realize how important it is to support survivors of suicide loss. So we have a program called Healing Conversations that connects survivors of suicide loss to train volunteers who have also lost somebody to help kind of connect them, help them share their story, get them resources. And then we also plan a Survivors of Suicide Loss Day. So that's a national thing that happens, International Survivors of Suicide Loss Day. It'll be on November 23rd this year. And it's just a time that we invite individuals who have lost somebody to come together. We have some programming that goes around it, and it's a really powerful day for everybody involved, a very healing event.
So how did you get involved with the organization?
So, I mean, I was hired as the Arizona Area Director. So I actually lost a cousin to suicide in 2005. And so that's kind of when I heard about the position, what kind of sparked my interest. I wanted to work for something that I felt passionate about, and mental health is always something that has been important to me. So that's kind of what sparked my interest in the position. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the short answer.
So, Erica, how is it that you got involved with the organization?
It's kind of a crazy story because
it's a serendipity story, I feel like.
It's an absolute serendipity story because I went to my first Out of the Darkness walk in 2017 totally on a fluke because I heard this thing was going on and my friend Katie's brother had actually died by suicide, I think maybe like 6 months before that. So I picked up the phone like a goofball and said, "Hey, Katie, you want to go to this thing? It's a walk. It goes to suicide prevention," and completely not thinking about how emotional this was going to be for her. So we got out there and I see, we're talking 2,000 people that I'm looking around and I'm like, oh my goodness, all of these people have been affected by suicide. Mm-hmm. And it just broke my heart. And one of the speakers was actually saying, she said, you know, our community is really like a patchwork quilt. It's got all these different colors and different personalities. And some of the personalities are maybe a little more vibrant than others. But if you ever take any one of those pieces of fabric and you rip it out, it leaves a hole and it affects every other piece of fabric around it. And it just hit home with me because it really made me think, you know, there are a lot of people that are out there living in the world that because of either mental illness or just feeling alone, they're feeling really, really lonely. Mm-hmm. And so it really personally impacted me because I was kind of feeling lonely at the moment too. And I thought, not that I was thinking about taking my own life.
Yeah.
But it really impacted me, and I thought, you know, somebody should do something about this. And whenever I get one of those kind of tears, I think, well, maybe that person should be me. So in 2018, I actually challenged myself to go out and meet one person and have a conversation with them that I'd never met before. So I met 52 strangers in 2018, and I wrote about each one of them. They told me all amazing stories that I never would have put together on my own. And at the end of 2018, I actually put together a book based on that adventure. It's called 52 New Friends by Erica Macbeth. You can find it on Amazon. And by the way, all the proceeds from that book actually go back to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, because that's actually where the whole seed of everything started.
Yeah.
So even though I haven't personally lost someone to suicide, it's such a huge passion for me. Because I feel like there's just such a great need in our community. And the one thing I love about this organization is they have done so much research in finding out all of the areas where people are most vulnerable. And so they can put the money specifically where people are going to need it at the time when they need it. And I feel like this organization is going to save a lot of lives by doing it. And we also have a nationwide initiative by 2025 to actually cut the suicide rate by 20%. And that's a huge goal.
Mm-hmm.
But we're well on our way to doing it by putting those programs in place exactly when people actually need them.
Can you talk a little bit more about that research that's being done and how you choose to invest in those areas?
Yeah, so the research and kind of the decisions about grants and stuff, that's really done on a national level. And there's actually, if you go to AFSP.org, there's a whole section on research, and you can kind of scroll through and look at all of the different research projects that we're currently funding. But we really realize how important it is in general to fund research, because we know in a lot of other cases, a lot of other major kind of like diseases and stuff like that, the survival rate is almost directly tied to funding and, mm-hmm. and kind of the advances that they make in those diseases. So we feel like it's really important that we kind of put money into research. And we're really proud that a lot of our programs are based on, or all of our programs are based on research. And I think it's important. Sometimes it's not like a cancer or heart disease or something like that, but we still can study it. And we're studying everything from kind of the biological factors to social factors, anything that we can help for early detection, so figure out people that might be more at risk for suicide, as well as kind of how intervention strategies, things like that. So it's really cool. And anybody that's interested in the research, I would definitely encourage them to go onto our website. Research has kind of informed us on anything from how we go about asking people. So a lot of people are afraid that if they bring up the subject of suicide or they ask somebody directly, are you thinking about suicide? That's the big taboo thing, is that if I ask somebody, well, maybe that will put the idea in their head right. that they didn't have before. And we know through research that that is not the case. So it's really important that we're able to research and kind of look into things like that so that we can inform these best practices. Because we want to be able to ask, and we encourage people to ask people that they're worried about, are you thinking about suicide? But that is all, kind of one of the big hesitations.
What are, if you can talk a little bit more about this, what are some of the most maybe surprising things that have been found through the research as far as who are most at risk?
So we know that suicide doesn't discriminate. So really we're all at risk, but certain individuals are kind of, they have...
I think it's what the research, from my understanding, has found a lot, that it's a lot of people that just feel trapped. Mm-hmm. And there are different ways that they feel trapped. Some of it may be, I feel trapped because of mental illness. Some of it may be I feel trapped because of some type of physical illness. But by and large, the majority of people who die by suicide feel trapped in some way. By taking the stigma off of talking about suicide, what we're really doing is it's making more people feel free to say, oh, I'm not alone in this.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not as trapped as I really think that I am. Maybe this isn't the only way out. So by talking about it more, that really kind of releases that stigma.
And I think that's the case with a lot of things. When you don't talk about it, when you don't tell anyone that you're going through it, it kind of just festers inside and seems bigger than it actually is.
Yeah, and so that's kind of one of the big things that we push, is treating your mental health as important as your physical health. And most of us are comfortable talking about a lot of things that we're going through. If I broke my arm, I wouldn't feel ashamed to tell you that, and that I was in pain.
Right.
And that ask you to, take me to the hospital, take me to the emergency room, because I need somebody to help me with this. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times with our mental health, society's kind of taught us to be ashamed, and that's kind of something we want to reverse. We want people to think of their mental health as just as important as their physical health. Kind of going back to kind of the warning signs, risk factors that you asked about. So we know that in terms of what puts people at a little bit more risk, and it's important that we know these things so we can just be aware. So that's a huge thing in prevention, is being aware of the things that might put us at more at risk. We know there's not one thing that's going to cause suicide. It's very complex, and it often is when a whole bunch of kind of risk factors converge onto each other. But things like mental health conditions, so depression we know is a big one. Serious or chronic health conditions can also increase someone's risk. Traumatic brain injury is something that we've found through research that can increase people's risk. Environmental factors, so things like access to lethal means can also put someone at a higher risk. Prolonged stress, stressful life events, so things like losing a job, even having a baby, things like that can increase risk. And then exposure to another person's suicide. So that's not even just like, when I say that, I'm not just saying even just like witnessing a suicide, but just having someone close to you that you've lost. And also, the way we talk about suicide in the media is so important, and the way we talk about it in general and talking about it in a safe way, because we know that
contagion is what we call it. And like I said, exposure to another person's suicide can kind of have a detrimental effect if we're not talking about it in a safe way. So, and then other things like historical factors, so a family history of mental illness and or suicide in the family, childhood abuse, neglect, things like that can also be contributing factors.
Corey Frohlander and Erica McBeth are my guests this morning, and both representing the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention Arizona chapter. Now, September is Suicide Prevention Month, and the organization has many great resources for the community that you can access on the website, which is afsp.org. But I want to talk about having these difficult conversations and how you have them. Erica, earlier you talked about a friend you invited to do the walk with you and how she had lost someone close to her to suicide. Had you talked to her about it before that?
No, I mean, her brother was very, when she lost her brother, it was so impactful to her. And she and I, of course, I had said, you know, I'm so sorry for your loss, but it really never gone any further than that. And when we actually got to the walk, and by the way, our Out of the Darkness walk here in Phoenix is going to be held at Salt River Fields on November 3rd. I would encourage everybody to come out, whether you have been affected by suicide or not, just to actually see the huge amount of people that this affects right here in Arizona. It's incredible. And I feel like there's almost a joining together at that particular walk because we are all coming together in. And the majority of people that are there have lost somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely emotional, but it's also very healing for people to be able to say, listen, I couldn't do something to help them, but now I can do something to maybe help someone else.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly impactful.
Corey, is there anything else you'd like to add when it comes to having those difficult conversations?
So, I mean, I think it kind of comes down to relationship, and there's certain things that we know we can see in terms of if that should kind of trigger those worries, and it's no different in someone that's lost somebody as opposed to just, you know, your best friend. Things like having kind of warning signs kind of include like how they're talking. So if they're talking about kind of have totally losing hope or, you know, not wanting to be around anymore. Behaviors. So if they're acting recklessly and that's something that's kind of out of character for them, giving away possessions, they're kind of more fatigued than normal. So it really just comes down to that, again, that relationship. And we encourage people to have this honest conversation and do it in a private place so that somebody doesn't feel like, you know, embarrassed or anything like that. And you can usually kind of gauge. I've had that conversation not with someone that's lost somebody, but just in general, somebody that I was worried about. And so, you know, asking that question, we're afraid of it. And it's something that's really hard for people to even think about doing. But if you think about it, it really shows that you're concerned about somebody and that you want to help them. So some people might be, you know, a little caught off guard, but especially if they are thinking about it, a lot of people will say yes. You know, they don't want to burden others with their issues. So I think just having the courage for us to ask that question really makes people feel cared about.
And I think it gives them the courage to talk about it,
too. To talk about it, that it's okay. You can talk about it with me, and I'm not going to judge you for it, and I want to help you if this is really something that you are thinking about. And again, we encourage people to have that. Just you kind of have to ask the question very bluntly. Are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about killing yourself? Because we know that a lot of times people, like Erica mentioned before, when they're having these thoughts, they're in kind of such a state of tunnel vision, and they're in so much pain. And if you think about it, I think about a time that you were in the most maybe physical pain in your life. So whether it was a broken bone or childbirth or anything like that, you probably wouldn't have even been able to give somebody accurate directions to your house, let alone kind of make any sort of rational decisions. And mental pain is no different. Mm-hmm. So when people are in this kind of state of crisis, they're not thinking clearly. So we have to be very direct. And they are in pain. So if I asked you, are you thinking of harming yourself? That's pretty vague, right? And harming myself, if I'm thinking of ending my pain, that's I'm not thinking of harming myself. So we do need to be very direct in, are you thinking about suicide, so that we're clear with people. Yeah.
Do you have resources available on your website, you know, for people who need some more support or advice in having those conversations? And if you want to talk about the programs that you offer right now, too.
Yeah. So for anybody, if you're kind of if you're in crisis yourself or you're worried about someone, we always encourage them to call that National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, so the 1-800-273-TALK line. That is a wonderful program. It's actually a program of SAMHSA. And they, I think it's something that, I think the Lifeline is getting a lot more publicity, but what people don't know is that if you are worried about somebody, you can call that Lifeline too. So it doesn't have to be just if you're in crisis. If you're worried about someone and you don't know what to do and you don't know, well, maybe should I ask them, maybe shouldn't I ask them, or if I ask them, where, you know, what do we do after that? The individuals that answer those lines are trained, and they can help walk you through the steps, listen to your specific mm-hmm. situation, and kind of help you through that. So that is a great resource. On our website, though, we do have a lot of kind of information on just kind of prevention and the same thing, a lot of the similar things that I'm talking about. But if you're like, you know, actively concerned about somebody in that moment, I definitely encourage calling that Lifeline for sure.
Do you want to talk about the programs that you have available to the public and any outreach that you do as well?
So we have some really great programs. We do a lot of community education. We do have a school program. It's called More Than Sad. And it is, we have actually three versions of More Than Sad. We can present to teachers. We can have a module that we can present to parents. And those are both specific to suicide. And then we also have a module that can be presented to students that is more focused on depression and helping them identify the signs of depression in themselves. So that is a great program, and we do it quite often in the community.
What ages do you reach out to or offer this program?
So that is more geared for parents of kind of middle school to high school students. We also have kind of a general community education program that I love. It's one of my favorites. It's called Talk Saves Lives. It is about an hour-long presentation. We can do it in lunch and learns. I do it at libraries. I do it all over. It's not really specific to a certain situation, but it's an hour-long presentation. It kind of goes over a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about, so it kind of gives a broad scope of the problem, so statistics. It goes into research, and then it really deep dives into those warning signs, risk factors, and then how you talk to somebody that you're worried about. So it's a really great option that we have. Again, it's one of my favorites.
And who is that available to, and how can they?
That is available to anybody. And like I said, we kind of focus on the whole community because we realize everybody can be at risk for suicide. Yeah. And so that can be kind of requested through our website. That individuals interested in kind of hosting that for a group can request that through our website. And all of the programs that we have and resources that we provide are free. So it's something that I am really proud as a chapter that we're able to do for the community, is that we never charge for anything that we offer.
Well, that is a great segue to talk about donations and why that's so important, because although I know these services are free to the public, it does cost money to create them and maintain them and keep them going. So, Erica, I understand you're doing a fundraiser yourself right now.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
I can't take credit for this, because honestly, the idea came from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, but it's a 10-day challenge to challenge you to raise $200. And I thought...
For your team. Erica has a team for the walk.
Yes, for my team for the walk.
Yeah.
So I looked at it and I was like, wow, $200, that seems like a lot. Can I just put like $200 in? This kind of seems scary. But I just committed to myself that I was going to do it. And it had a list of 10 different types of people to ask every day for 10 days. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to give it a shot because why not? Sometimes I like to challenge my things for fun little things to do, and I would let people follow it on social media. And the first day was, you know, put in your own $20 contribution. Perfect, easy, that was done.
You didn't have to ask anybody for anything.
To ask anybody for anything to do that. That was super easy. Second one on the list was ask your spouse or partner for that. And I thought, well, I don't have a spouse or partner, so that's going to be difficult. But I got really super creative in a brainstorm, so I went back and I asked an ex-boyfriend, and he gave me $20. So that was awkward, but you know, here at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, we seize the awkward. So he gave me $20, and I was like, okay. So then the third challenge was probably easy for most people. It was like, ask your mom or dad for $20. And, you know, I don't have the best relationship with my family, so that's not really an option for me. So I went to someone that was a mother-like figure, and I said, listen, you're the only one that I can really ask this question to. Could you give me $20? And she did. And so I've been documented as I have gone along, and it's just really been amazing to me because I'm 5 days in at this point, and I've raised way more money than I thought I would, and nobody has told me no. So it's actually super easy. Other people that were on the list were friends, neighbors, coworkers, supervisors, a business owner. So I've kind of got ideas of other people that I can ask. And the more I've gone along in this, it's way easier than I thought it was going to be.
Okay, so off the air, you said, and I said, oh, this worked out perfectly, Erica. Today's Friday. We're recording on Friday to air this on Sunday. Today, what's the challenge today?
So the challenge today is to ask a coworker for $20. So,
which is me.
Yes. So Minnie and I actually work together. So I said, hey, Minnie, since we're doing this and today is coworker, you want to give me $20?
Yeah.
And she is. Woo!
So yeah, like I said, this worked out perfectly. So, you know, and I think, you know, fundraising, though, asking people for money is always difficult. But this is for such a great cause. Can you tell me a little bit about where this money goes and how it's used for the organization?
Yeah, so the money itself, so we have our Arizona chapter. So this is all kind of raised through our Arizona chapter. We do send some of it back to our national office. Again, like I talked about before, they are funding the research and they help us put together all of these programs that we're doing that are such high quality, things that are so valuable to the community. So we do send some back to them. And then locally, again, it helps fund things like these Talk Saves Lives presentations. We give out so much printed collateral. So I am a huge proponent of anybody that will take my information when I'm at fairs, or just even I keep it in my purse to give it out, because we have these little cards called Lifesavers manuals. And I think I encourage everyone to just take them, put them in your wallet. You never know when you're going to need them. So that's a huge thing, is getting this information out into the community in whatever way, shape, or form that we can. And again, we don't charge for it. Our advocacy day is something we, like I said, we do in the spring that costs, and then our Healing Conversations program. So any of those individuals that we meet with, we send them kind of a packet of resources, things like that. We're also planning on this spring offering some training, so bereavement support group facilitator trainings, and we also do some other kind of more in-depth trainings. So there's some trainings that we can offer that are a little bit longer and a little bit more intense for people that are more interested in learning how to really ask that question. So half-day and two-day trainings that are asking those questions, and then kind of also more of kind of crisis intervention type trainings. But we do have a lot of really great things planned for the year ahead. And all of our website kind of lists a lot of them. And for anybody that's interested in what we're doing and kind of things upcoming in the community, we have it's afsp.org/Arizona that has a lot of the really cool things that people can get involved in and that we're currently doing.
Corey Frohlander and Erica McBeth are my guests this morning and here with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention Arizona chapter. And Erica, it looked like you were about to say something too just now.
One of the things that really attracted me to this organization, because I've been involved with other nonprofits in the past.
Was it me? No.
Well, it was you too. But it was also because this is a really particularly well-run organization where if you really look at administrative costs, they are incredibly low. The people that are running this on a national scale, you're not looking at these huge exorbitant salaries that a lot of CEOs would take. They're very much in normal kind of range. And I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe the last statistic I saw, administration costs are only like 17% of total revenue taken in. That is incredible for a nonprofit. And it really just goes to show the heart of the people that are running this organization to really make sure that the money is getting into places where it really needs to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the beauty of having a national organization and the local chapter is because the local chapter really benefits from the resources that the national organization can provide. So I'm able to provide such high quality programming, resources, and kind of all of the stuff they produce for us is amazing. And like I said, it's all based on that research that's done hugely on a national level. So it just allows us as a chapter to do so much more when we're part of this, you know, just a small part of this huge network. And we have chapters all over the country. So Arizona is just one. We have chapters in all 50 states that are doing very similar things. They're doing similar walks. They're doing similar programming. So we're really trying hard to get all of this really important information out to all of the communities that really need it.
And when you think about the topic of suicide as a whole and how it has actually changed in the conversation, you know, those of us that are a little bit older may remember back, you know, 30, 40 years ago, people did not talk about it. Mm-hmm. It was something to be that no one wanted to discuss, no one wanted to talk about.
It was like cancer. Didn't even say the word.
You didn't even want to say the word. Mm-hmm. And now that we're having these open, honest conversations about really what is happening to people, we can really get to the cause of the problem and we can save a lot of people's lives.
And unfortunately, I think that kind of changed because we've had so many high-profile people that have died by suicide. And it's kind of opened up the conversation, which is good in a way, but it's just sad to have seen so much of it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's kind of where I feel like we're really kind of at a turning point in these last few years in that that's kind of opened up our eyes. And it's sad that it that's, you know, the situation that kind of turned us in this direction. But I think now people are really a lot more receptive and open to it and realize that we need to talk about it. We need to talk about it in a safe way, but it does need to be a conversation that needs to be had. So that part of it is actually exciting for me to see the community really opening up to the whole topic and groups that I never would have thought would have invited me to, you know, come speak are now calling me and saying, can you come talk to us? We want to learn more and we want to know how we can all kind of join together because we do a presentation and it has a slide in there that says something about like you can prevent suicide, but I always like to kind of change it and say we can prevent suicide. It's going to take a community. And one of my board members always says that when she presents is that it's going to take all of us to kind of move the needle. And it's something we all need to be educated on and not afraid to know about. Because if we don't know about it and we don't know those warning signs and risk factors, we're not going to recognize them in someone we love when they, you know, if they ever occur. So I think it's just really important that we be open to the conversation and be able to recognize those things.
Do you have any volunteer opportunities here locally?
Yeah, so we have a lot of kind of different volunteer opportunities depending on what people are interested in. So we always need volunteers for the walk, so the day of the walk. If you're interested in that, I would encourage you to register for the walk. So what we didn't mention is that registering for the walk is free, so we want the walk to be accessible to anybody. So obviously it is a fundraising event, but it is a very, very important event. In general, because it brings people together, it helps them feel that community. So we never want cost or fear of fundraising to be something that prohibits people from attending. So it is free. So if you're interested in volunteering, I would encourage you to register for the walk. And there's a kind of a section on there that you can check that you're interested in volunteering, and someone will be reaching out to you about that. We also have other things that, so the advocacy that I talked about, anybody is invited to that day, and there'll be more information. We just kind of got confirmation on the actual date, but soon we'll have kind of an event listing on that webpage that I mentioned, and people can sign up for that. Advocacy is great, and it's something that you can do at home in your pajamas. So there's kind of also a sign up through our advocacy section on our website, on the AFSP.org website, that they can sign up to be an advocate, and we will email you opportunities to reach out to your congresspeople and ask them for certain things or different actions that you can take. So that's a great way to volunteer if you don't have a lot of time, but you really want to do something. And then again, people can come out to the advocacy day. The other thing I would say is start a team. So people don't really think of that as a volunteer opportunity, but I kind of think that starting a team and fundraising is so helpful, but you also, and I think probably as Erica has found, you never know who's been affected in your life. And starting a team is a great way to just open up that conversation with the people that you know and are surrounded by, and helping us get that word out and helping us kind of shift the kind of view of suicide and making it something that's more okay to talk about is mm-hmm. so helpful too. And that's, like I said, we need everybody to do that. So start a team is a huge one.
Can you give, because you mentioned Advocacy Day and the walk, can you give those dates also again?
Yeah, so Advocacy Day, or State Capitol Day, sorry, is February 3rd. So that the registration information for that isn't live yet. Just like I said, we just kind of got confirmation about that. But the walk is November 3rd, and it is a new venue. So last year, if anybody attended, so we actually had over 3,000 people attend last year, and we're actually on track to have even more than that this year. So we're super excited. But it is a new venue and a new date. So last year, the walk was mid-December. This year, it is November 3rd, and we're at Salt River Fields, which we're really excited about. We also have a few other walks. So we have a Flagstaff walk on October 5th, if anybody wants a little vacation. Our Tucson walk is October 19th, and then our Prescott walk is November 9th.
And you could register online for any of those.
Mm-hmm.
And the website is afsp.org, correct?
/ Arizona, if you want to get to kind of our direct chapter stuff. But afsp.org will take you to all of the kind of national organization, and you can get to our chapter through that.
All right. My guests this morning are Corey Furlander, who is the Arizona Area Director for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and Erica McBeth, who works here at Intercom and is also on the board of the organization. Now, do either of you have any stories to kind of demonstrate the impact that the organization has had on the community that you can share with us?
I can tell you, because I reached out to help for help because I realized in the process of writing my book, the very first person that I had interviewed, unbeknownst to me, her nephew had died by suicide, like while I was in the process of doing all that. And I didn't know what to say to her. Mm. And so I reached out for help. This was before I was on the board, but I reached out for help because I said, you know, what do I say? And basically what everyone said is just listen. Listen what she has to say. And because I think when people have a loved one that has died by suicide, they often go into this, what could I have done to help prevent this?
Mm-hmm.
And the sad reality is, if you didn't have the information, there is really nothing that you could have done. And to bring peace within yourself, and I'll go back to my friend whose brother passed away. She actually had given me a piece of advice, and she said, listen, the way that I really settled this within myself was I realized that my brother had a disease of the mind that unfortunately killed him. And that is why he died. And it wasn't anything that I could have said or could have done. But unfortunately, for some people, the resources just weren't in place. Mm-hmm. But by talking about this and by having those resources in place and having those awkward conversations, more people will live. And you might not always have statistics on that, but you know that more people are going to live because they realize this was just a moment in my life that was a down moment instead of a lifetime of pain. Most people just get to that point that they think they have tunnel vision. They think nobody cares about me. What am I doing? I'm in so much pain. When in reality, if you reach out to them and say, do you realize what a huge, horrific impact this would have on me? And you say it to them with tears in your eyes and let them know how much you care, it will change their life and it will change the direction of their life.
Mm-hmm. I think, and I don't want to make assumptions, but I think that sometimes when people do think about suicide, they don't necessarily think about the pain they would cause the other people around them. They just want to stop their own pain.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's right. And I think that's important. It's important perspective for everybody to realize is that a lot of times when people are in this just state of crisis, it's not that they kind of even want to end their lives. It's that they feel that there is no other option. Mm-hmm. And I've heard kind of the analogy used before is that if there was, you know, a burning building and, you know, you felt like there was flames kind of like all around you, your last resort, you know, you see people jumping out windows. And it's not that they wanted to do that.
Yeah.
It's that they felt there was no other option and that was the only way that they could get away from, you know, this and, you know, the fire, really. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important that we realize kind of the perspective of the suicidal person, that it's just they're in such intense pain that they really see no other option out. And again, that's why, like Eric mentioned, it's important that we can recognize those like warning signs and risk factors that kind of lead people to that point, so that we can ask these important questions before it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you want to talk about that we haven't touched on yet about the organization or just about Suicide Prevention Month in general? Or?
Yeah, so Suicide Prevention Month is the month of September. And actually next week is Suicide Prevention Week. So I know we're going to be really busy at a lot of different kind of community events next week. But I think just a huge thing that people can do that are listening at home is I would encourage everyone go to our website, see what we're about, but also follow us on social media. And we will be sharing some really awesome like infographics, information about the Lifeline and just all kinds of things to help get that conversation started. So just do what you can to get that conversation started kind of in your own life. Like I said, we are huge about helping shift this conversation so that your mental health is just as important as your physical health, and that kind of starts with changing the conversation. So any help that we can get on sharing that and kind of sharing that message is huge. So and Erica also happens to be our social media admin. She's a rock star and posts all kinds of cool stuff for us and just kind of ways you can help, resources, all kinds of things go into our social media page.
I think we've touched on the majority of topics. I will say this, though. Like, if you go on the social media pages and you want to leave me a nice little message, guess what? I'll answer you back.
And how can people follow the organization on social media?
So we are on Facebook. But on Facebook, you're going to want to search for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention Arizona Chapter. It's at Arizona Chapter AFSP. So for Twitter, you can follow us at AFSPAZ. And for Instagram, it is AFSP Arizona. AFSPAZ.
And then do you want to give the hotline number once
again?
Yeah,
that's what I was just going to say. That's the last thing that if I can leave anybody with, it would be the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's 1-800-273-TALK, which TALK is 8255. So it's 1-800-273-8255. There's also another cool resource. It's the crisis text line. So if you aren't into talking on the phone, the crisis text line, you can text TALK, so T-A-L-K, to 741-741, and a trained crisis counselor will chat with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that can be even, that doesn't even have to be like suicide specific. That's just anything you're worried about or need someone to talk to. That's a really great resource, is that crisis text line.
And both of these numbers are not only for someone who may be thinking about suicide, but also someone who wants to have a conversation with someone they think might be at risk, right?
Yeah. Because, I mean, sometimes we just need someone to talk to before, mm-hmm. you know, these serious situations. So these are, again, trained professionals, and you can explain the situation to them, and they will help guide you through the process. I've even, even if you have someone that you're worried about and they don't want to call themselves, you can three-way call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. So call with them. So there's a lot of different ways you can use these resources. And they can, like I said, help guide you through a situation, help guide you to resources. And if you or someone you love is in crisis, they can kind of talk with you as well. So they're great resources and something everybody should really know about.
Okay. Corey Furlander is the Arizona Area Director for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and Erica McBeth is on the board of the organization. Thank you both for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you also for joining us for Sunday Sunrise, a public affairs show produced locally by Intercom Phoenix. I'm Minnie Salas, your host. Have a great Sunday.